And welcome to The Geek Embassy Watches The Handmaid's Tale. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here today with Isabella. Say hi.
Hi!
And we're going to talk about the Hulu original series, The Handmaid's Tale, which is based on the book by Margaret Atwood. And how many episodes was it? I'm trying to remember. 13?
10, I'm pretty sure.
10, okay. 10 episode miniseries.
It only feels like 13.
It feels, yeah. Yeah, 10 episodes.
They are about an hour, though.
Yeah, so they are.
It's a pretty long series.
It is a pretty long series. Each episode is a good hour, 50 or 52 minutes minimum, I think, on most of them. So it's a pretty hefty show. And it's a pretty heavy show as well. it would be one, I guess, my first recommendation, or maybe one of my first observations about having watched it, was I was really glad I was watching it as it was airing, because I binged the first 3 episodes and was hugely depressed for like the next 3 days.
Yeah, same here. So I actually had to take a break after episode 7, and I didn't watch it for like over a month, just because I couldn't make myself, like, I had to wait until the finale had aired to go back to it, because I couldn't stand the cliffhangers anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Driving me a little crazy, just being on edge, waiting to see what would happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I took a break.
Yeah, pretty much every episode has some major, you know, cliffhanger at the end of it, where our heroine, Offred, aka June, is in potential danger or trouble, or sometimes things are good and I don't know, are things good? No.
And then you're just expecting something horrible to happen.
So. Right. Yeah. So there's never,
even when things are good, things are not good.
Yeah. The question is of like, what is going to like happen with all this is it. Yeah. It's a hard watch. There's no way to get around that. So what I want to center our discussion today around is the theme of perspectives, both from mine and Isabella's perspectives as viewers of The Handmaid's Tale. We come at it from different angles, Isabella having read the book, and I haven't. Yeah, a long time ago. So she had at least knew the story, and I didn't know. I went in it completely blind, not really having much of an idea of what it was about, other than a lot of the commentary I was seeing online after the first episodes aired were, oh, it's so topical and I can't believe it's coming out right now. And so I knew it had a lot to do with gender, and I knew it was a feminist novel, but I didn't know much about the actual story. And the perspective of being a parent and not being a parent, because I think being a mom and watching The Handmaid's Tale, I think it made this a different experience for me than it would have otherwise been. And I also want to talk about the representations of race, class, and gender we see in the series, because I think it complicates some of the things that we think about those topics. And it's really, I don't want to say a nice representation, because it's a terrible representation, but it is a microcosm of looking at all 3 of those in a very kind of profound way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. So where do you think we should start?
Okay, wait, let's start with our background. So I came into it having read the book.
Right.
And having read, well, there was a like small radio drama that someone put on from Sex Crimes and Audio Tapes, where they do like little mini like audio dramas, and they did like an adaptation of it. So I listened to that just before watching the series. That kind of refreshed
your memory of it.
My memory of it, because I think they stayed pretty true to the style of the book, especially because it's probably very not clear from the show, but in the book it's framed as like these are like recordings of what happened after Offred. I keep
you can say the name
June. After June escapes, but it like ends at her escape, so we don't know anything that happens after right. that.
Which is where the show ends, or this season ends, because they are doing a season two. So this is, the story is going to continue. But I didn't, like, not having known the book, I didn't know that's where it ended. And when this, the show ended, I was like, yeah.
Which is why I'm like, I had to prepare you when I gave you the book. Like,
right.
this is how the book ends. There is no closure here. This is just, right. This is just a little snapshot of her life during this time. And there is kind of like a little epilogue being like, so many years later, people are studying this account of what happened during this time.
I see, yeah.
So you get a little bit of that, but no one knows what happened to June.
Right, of course. Well, and I would imagine, I mean, that was, not to jump too far ahead, but that was one of the hardest, one of the hardest scenes, like what you had told me after I had finished it, how it was the books from June's perspective entirely. And so we don't see a lot of what happens to the other characters that we actually see in the series, in the Hulu series. Looking at when Moira and June's husband escape to the refugee camps, Luke in Canada, seeing the posters of everybody, you know, who's looking for people who've gone missing and, you know, trying to find family and loved ones and all that stuff is just, it's heartbreaking.
Right. And I think that that definitely helps in the show to like open it up to see like the other sides of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But no, you have zero sense of what happened to Luke, what happens to Moira after June meets her at the brothel. I can't remember the name of it, but
Jezebel's,
of mm-hmm. course.
Of course.
I knew it was something horribly horribly sexist. right, we don't know any of what happens to those people. So.
To any of those characters. And you know, we don't know anything right. of what happens to oh God, I can't remember her name now too. I have the IMDb open, so remember, so I can find out what he's saying. It's her friend, Aufglen, played by Alexis Bledel. You don't know what happens to Aufglen either, the whole female genital mutilation that they do and all that stuff. None of that's
right. I don't think that's in the book at all. She just kind of disappears, and that's kind of I think it's kind of the idea, like the monster you don't see is scarier.
Yeah, like, you know, the
like
question
you feel
is
like who happens. Knows what happens to her.
Right.
Or
does she come back in the book? Because in the thing she comes back and she ends up a different off.
I don't think so.
Okay. So they don't ever have her life return.
I think they brought her back to kind of explore that whole mutilation part of it.
Yeah.
Just to make it even like more horrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing that she watches her, her lover, hanged as well.
Right.
So,
I know you were like deeply traumatized after that scene.
I was deeply, that whole sequence, watching them go to court and watching them be, you know, persecuted for their feelings for each other, just being a gender traitor.
Weird, because I would expect that to have more of an influence, like more of an effect on me, but I was just like numb to it at that point in a weird way. It's kind of like when you watch The Walking Dead and you see yet another person horribly killed and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think at that point I was still pretty sensitive. I don't think I ever got to the point where I was too terribly numb. I got more resilient to watching the scenes with the hardest scenes for me to watch, and this goes to my perspective as being a mom, were her flashbacks to being happy with her family and her daughter, realizing that there was so much at stake and so much that could be lost, like so much.
Right.
That was what kind of kept like there was one episode that started out with her having the memory of being at the carnival with Luke and her daughter. And I was just wrecked. Like, I cried through that whole episode. Like, and it wasn't even like I was crying after about what was happening. I was still crying about all of what it represented her having lost. And I think that was, you know, that pulled through. It got a little easier. I wasn't as torn up about the scene toward the end. It's either in the finale or the second to last episode where the commander's wife takes her to, Serena Joy takes her to see her daughter. And and she's locked in the car and she's not allowed to, you know, to talk to her, see her. She just gets to see her from a distance. I thought that would have been a more profoundly difficult
scene. See, that's
scene
where I got all emotional. Really? Like, this is happening like right now for June. This is not just like her
memory of it.
Her memory of what's happening. It's like she's right there, like just out of reach.
And yeah.
Horrible. Horrible.
Well, I think, yeah, oh God. Well, and that was what I think I was thinking more about, the kind of person Serena Joy had to be.
Because she almost comes off kind of like personable.
Yeah.
In the show at some point.
Yeah, at like, some points, like you
it
feel
shows
like
her suffering and
yeah, it
being
shows
like
her
caught up.
Which I was glad, because it's so easy to make villains two-dimensional. And it'd be so easy to make Serena Joy two-dimensional, but to see her pain and see how, I mean, it was kind of ironic because she wrote some of the legislation.
Right, like she had a part in all this.
Yeah, she played like this huge role in what happened and how it was played out and how it was designed. And then she's mad that she has to live underneath it. It's like, did you think you were going to be separate? Like, did you think they'd still let you read?
Right.
You know, like, Pastorana said women can't read. Right, because you wrote a book, so you would be able to keep reading because, you know, you helped them build these laws. Guess what? It applied to you too. So, you know, there was that, like, that kind of irony. But I was starting to feel a little empathy for her until she did that to June. And once she did that to June, I'm like, oh, you are bad.
Right, but even with that, she's kind of, you kind of see her foil in her friend, and I can't remember her name either, the one who gets Janine's baby.
Right.
And how she's so horribly, like, unsympathetic towards Janine, like, being torn from her child.
Yeah.
And she's like, she's just a monster. Like, how she can be so ungrateful. And she even gets upset with the baby for crying.
Right. Well, and that's the idea of this, you know, perfect world that they're creating. I guess the idea is that the kids will be perfect too, and they won't have to, like.
Right.
Like,
which makes me wonder, like, how long they've been
without babies.
Without children?
Mm-hmm.
That, like, maybe she just grew up without not having that many children around and doesn't know how baby, like, even works.
Well, yeah, that's kind of that. I had that impression from the Martha. I mean, Martha is another category, right? They're the ones, the housekeepers.
They're Martha's, like, the servants.
Yeah. So the Martha in June's house, in Offred's house, is so excited about the potential of her being pregnant. And just the excitement that she felt, oh my God, it's amazing. There's going to be a baby when she's not pregnant and they think that she might be, that idea, of how excited she was when she's so removed from, I mean, it's, you know, she's the housekeeper, so she'll be there and I'm sure she'll be helping, but she's so removed from it that she could have that level of excitement about somebody else having a baby that somebody else is going to care for is.
Right. But I don't know if that was. So I wonder, like, how she's affected by them not having a child. Because you can imagine that she kind of has to bear the brunt of Serena Joy's anger at some points, right? So she has, if there's a baby around, things might be,
better for her.
Improve.
Maybe.
But she did seem, like, genuinely excited for that.
Yeah, like, that didn't ring, like selfish, like she was just like truly, like, you know, because I imagine at least that the, you know, they're pretty much tied into whoever can be the handmaids, right? Like, they don't get to choose who gets to be fertile, but they get to choose who gets to be in the positions of Martha and Aunt, right? So they can very easily pick people who are more devout or more zealot or more, you know, toe the party line. And I really had that like feeling from her that she really just felt like it was going to be God's grace upon them that they had a child.
Right. I think the only thing that makes me think that is because she did towards the end of the season with the wine where she shares about her son and how he died in the war. Like, cause she didn't have any part of the creation of Gilead. She lost people just like everyone else.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess I gotta wonder like how invested in Gilead and its beliefs she is.
Well, I don't know. It seemed like she was, but you know, it seemed to me
because
like
she
it was.
Also didn't get sent away to the colonies because that's the eternal like
threat
hanging over everyone's head is like if you disobey, if you
something about skin peeling off and horrible like exposure to toxic stuff.
I don't know if they explain the colonies that much in the show, but it's kind of just this like
looming threat.
These like areas where like everything has just been so wrecked by radiation and everything that they send everyone who disobeys to the colonies to do like environmental cleanup, and like it's such a toxic environment that it will like kill you within 2 or 3 years. Like it's a death sentence, just a really slow one.
Right. So, yeah, that's the impression I had from it, because I think the only real mention is somebody says, do you want to be sent to the colonies and have your skin fall off? I think it's Moira says to June when they're at Jezebel's.
You're right.
You have to take care of yourself so they don't send you to the colonies and have your skin fall off.
Right.
Another of the looming threats that... that just sort of hangs out there.
Yeah, I don't think they explained it that much. Because, like, in the book, you kind of get, you understand that how we got here is, like, environmental, like, catastrophe. And
yeah,
the world is so poisoned that, like, so very little people can actually have children anymore.
Yeah, well, that's the impression you get with it. It's Mexico that comes to visit, and they haven't actually seen children in who knows how long. I think she actually said it's been, I don't know, was it like 15 years or something since a child had been born in the city that she was from?
Right.
Something to that effect. I can't remember exactly what the details are, but she actually mentions that. And it's indicated in that scene, so they have the... You know, they're trying to make some sort of deal, which is never really clear. It's indicated that they might be swapping some of the, you know, for resources, swapping out with Mexico some of the handmaids, the fertile handmaids.
Right, that's the impression I got, yeah.
Yeah. And the impression I had as well was that it was Serena Joy's suggestion to show them the children as the deal, you know, the thing that made the deal happen was, oh, we'll actually show you our kids. And once they saw the kids, they're like, oh my goodness, here are some children. Let's do this. So, oh God, it's just so messed up.
Well, it's like, it's human trafficking.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah,
Which makes me wonder, like with the advances in like fertility medicine and stuff, like why they haven't thought of different ways to.
Well, that was part of the issue that I took
with
it too.
Because in the 80s, I think when the book was written, it made a little bit more sense. But
yeah,
like nowadays.
They updated some of it because they said something in the, when they're in the Red Center and they're first being trained, the Aunt Lydia is giving the speech, and she's essentially blaming birth control for the issues that they're having. Well, we had our plan B, and we had this, and you know they updated it because they actually say plan B in there, so they had to update that because plan B didn't exist in 1985.
Right, and you see in, like, their materials that it's actually set in the modern day.
Right. Right.
Well, I think, or it's like 2015 or something.
Right.
Like it's yeah. really recent.
It's, yeah, it's very, yeah, they make reference to the years and that, and it is definitely current. But that was the thing, like, because after the first ceremony,
right,
Offred says, it would be better if I stay laying down. Like, that's going yeah. to, you know, because...
science.
Yeah, because science. Exactly. Like, fertility science. If you stay, you know, here's a thing for you. Because Serena Joy's like, get out. And she's like, but it would be better if I stay on my back. And she's like, get out. And it's like...
How much do you really want this? Like,
you're like actually actively sabotaging this. Like, this isn't like a small thing that you're doing. You're like, you know, you're making this harder. And if the whole thing about this is let's make babies, then shouldn't you be practicing all the things that we know are true? And I mean, people knew back right. in 1985, even if we're going to date it back to when it was written, they knew then that you needed to, you know, keep it inside.
Yeah. So that's why, so when we talked about this earlier, I'm like, this isn't really about making babies.
No,
is it?
It's about control.
It's about control and mm-hmm. controlling the women. So mm-hmm.
yeah, and controlling women's bodies. And that's the whole reason why you see the clothes pared down the way that they are, where they're not allowed to shave their legs, and they had the, you know, the wives, all of their clothes are high-necked, high-collared, full bodies covered up, long skirts, long coats.
They're not allowed to read. They're not allowed to do anything except nope. apparently garden, like Serena Joy does.
Yeah. That's pretty much, other than, you know, storming around the house and being horrible. That's the only other thing we ever seen her do is skin out in the garden. Because she doesn't even cook. Like, the cooking and the housekeeping is...
All done by the Marthas.
So, like, really, it would be interesting for me to see more of Serena Joy's backstory. Like, I'm glad that they put in what they did with them trying to conceive on their own and not being able to, the toll that took on the two of them, how, you know, she was, you know, believing in the changes that he was helping to orchestrate, how she went to the movies, how hard it was for her to give up some of her clothes as she was, you know, as the regime was changing and everything was happening. But I would love to know more about what she really, like, in her internal dialogue, what she thought she was doing as opposed to what happened.
Right. I would love to see a Serena Joy centric episode to see what she actually did. I don't know if we're actually going to see that anymore since.
Yeah, it's at the point.
It ends with June getting taken away.
Yeah, I can't imagine, given the star power that Joseph Fiennes and Yvonne Stravinsky have, that they're not going to be in, like, then they're not going to resolve that. Like, I can't imagine they have the two of them and they're just going to be like, bye.
Right.
Especially since, like, it was funny because I had read something about an upcoming scene being one of the commanders being on trial for, you know, misdeeds. And I just assumed it was before I had watched the episode. I just assumed it was going to be, you know, the commander, Offred or Fred, that was on trial, because I was like, oh, he got caught at Jezebel's or something like that. And right. It wasn't. It was Jeannie's commander, because it was right after right. she had accused him of, you know, saying that he was going to take her away and all that stuff. So I just thought it was going to be him on trial. So now I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're going to put him on trial, because I would love to see that.
I don't know. I feel like they only got the impression that Warren, Jeannie's commander, was put on trial is because she would, like, so publicly accused him
yeah
of everything, so it was, like, impossible to ignore, because you kind of get the impression that this happens all the time. I mean, there's a club that runs pretty much just because the commanders like to go somewhere and do
right.
whatever
and have, you know, scantily clad women to look at and, you know, do what they will with, the whole point right. of Jezebel, you know. But maybe, I don't know, I just kind of had this feeling like he was going to get caught, or maybe that was more projection that I just really wanted.
Because Serena Joy knows.
Well, she knows at the end. I don't know that she knew.
Well, before. She definitely knew that happened with the previous one.
She did?
Or did she make some comment like, do you want this to happen again or something? Because I think she makes the point that that's why the previous one, previous handmaid, killed herself, was because of the attention the commander was giving her.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of that. I remember thinking about it too, that I was uncertain as to if that was that he had done the same kind of thing with her. I mean, he must have. That was the conversation Chris and I had about it, was the Latin phrase that's carved into the closet.
Don't let the bastards get you down. Right.
She had to. Well, I was, because it was his family's house, right? That he had grown up there.
So.
That was my.
I guess so.
So I wasn't sure, because it was his phrase. The contention between Chris and I, Chris believed it was the other handmaid that had carved it into the wall. And I wondered if it was him as a child.
Oh, right. Because we see, I thought it was the previous handmaid.
That's what Chris thought too.
Because there was the whole scene with her finding like his Latin grammar book or something from when he was a kid. And that's written in the front, because it's like a kid's joke.
Right.
Latin phrase.
But that's why I thought it was him. Because he said, at that point, he said something. She asked what it meant. And he said it was a joke of a boy who was locked in a room to study Latin.
So maybe. I didn't even think about it. I just assumed it was the previous one.
Right. And that's what Chris assumed too. But I wasn't convinced on that. I'm not convinced.
I only think that because that's what June thought.
Yes. I'm not convinced about that. And I'm not convinced he had a relationship with the other Offred. I think that Serena Joy isolated the other Offred.
And kind of drove her.
Yes, and drove her insane. Yeah. And then she hung herself. Because I think that's why he makes the overtures of the Scrabble game and the connection with her to make a connection with her. And I don't think he did before. I don't know. Okay. I'm just saying, this is like, this is speculation. This is not what we've seen, but this is what I think was going on. Serena Joy was so jealous and so threatened that she cloistered the first Offred, that pushed her into, feeling so isolated. Because remember, there's a whole scene where she's doing the same thing to June in the beginning, before the visits to the commander begin.
Right.
She's finding her asleep on, and the Martha's finding her asleep on the floor in the closet. And, the Martha reports back and says, this is what's happening.
Right.
So I think that's how I built it in my head, was he didn't have this kind of relationship with her previously, with the previous Offred. And so he's attempting to make this more palatable for her and give her, that's why he has the magazines for her. He does little bits and pieces. It's Scrabble game is reasonably innocent, even though forbidden under whatever their laws are. Then the magazines show, bring her back to some of the pleasures that she had before all of this happened. And then Jezebel's.
Right.
And Jezebel's wasn't for her. I mean, he said it was for her, but it was for him. I mean, that was his,
Yeah.
Let me show you off. Let me show you.
He just seemed a little bit more practiced at it than I expect, if that was like the first time that he was doing all that.
Well, I may be
overlaying stuff from the book again, because
that's true too. When I'm looking at it from the perspective of someone who doesn't have the background of the book to build from, I just have the show. But he is a man of status and power, and was before.
Yeah.
So that sort of manipulation of the system is something that I feel like he would be rather good at.
That makes sense. No, yeah, I can see that.
I don't know. That was just a take I had on it. And I don't know. Like I said, it definitely is not the way most people were reading it. But that's how I saw it. I don't know. Is it different in the book? Or is there actual like evidence and shows that he did, you know, had that kind of relationship with the first?
Now I can't remember. Like, it's all mixed up in my head now. I'm not sure.
Right. No, that's how it was could for me. Be, but... with Game of Thrones, when I tried to read Game of Thrones. Like the overlaying, and I'm like, forget it.
That's kind of why I had to stop reading those books.
Yeah, that's why I stopped reading the books too. I'm like, I'm just going to let this be the show. When the show ends.
And I think I like the show better.
That's how I felt too. But I felt like, well, this is totally other topic, but I felt like he was writing much in kind of a... the highbrow fantasy stuff that I'm really not that much a fan of and to begin with. So,
right.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, okay, we've covered pretty well the book versus not, at least in the stuff that we've talked about so far. I've talked a little bit about my reaction to seeing June with her daughter, and how hard it was. Right. How hard someone that colored all of it. So the other thing I had to talk about was sort of the representations of race, class, and gender we see. Obviously, the representations and the determinations on gender are the most obvious.
Right, because women are like even more drastically oppressed in this reality than
than they are in our reality.
like it's like current day turns up to 100.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, you know, the treatment is clear. The fact that the laws limit things like reading also being, you know, associated with the same laws they had around slavery. And all that, all those kinds of things, the control of bodies, both physically and mentally.
And I didn't even pick up on this earlier, but when they go to Jezebel's, there's a point where they're like, wives are not allowed beyond this point. Like they're not even allowed to, like, out of the city.
Right. Right. Like you're even going further than the wives are allowed to go. So the wives
are
controlled.
Which makes me wonder, like, what's outside of the perfect little towns they have.
Yeah, I have no idea. That was part of what was so terrifying for me, is to see them like taking down the infrastructure. So when they do have the scene where Offred and Moira are trying to escape and they're going to the train and they can't figure out which direction the trains go because they've taken all the signage down as to which way the trains, you know, are headed.
Right. Like nothing is named the same anymore.
Right. They've taken down all the streets.
They're in what, Boston or something?
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, she doesn't even really know like where exactly she is because she has no sense of.
Right. Or they're trying
where she was taken.
They're trying to get to Boston, aren't they? Is that, I think that's where they were trying to head to, was Boston.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And they're
right,
somewhere
so
not
they don't even know where they are.
Yeah. They've been so removed and, you know, and hidden and not, you know, transported in vans without windows. So they have no idea where they've gone or how they've gone. But that was one of the things that was so scary, to think about a world where the infrastructure that you rely on is just erased.
Right. Like even traveling in another city is like difficult enough because it's so like
foreign, right? It's you
it's
know
so
different.
Foreign. Like, yeah. I can't imagine just not having anything.
But having no markers to indicate street names.
You don't even you don't have a phone.
Right.
Which is how I relied it on when I was in Seattle. Like I don't know where I'm going.
Direct me. Oh. A mighty and powerful handheld device. Show me where to go. Yeah, you know, all the things that, all the modern conveniences that we have and all the things we take so easily for granted. And we see that too in one of the first scenes when they realize that something's changed, when they went out for a run or something and they're going to get coffee, Moira and June. and they go into the coffee shop and the attendant's like, you know, your card isn't working. And then, you know, neither one of their debit cards are working. And then I can't
even. Right. And they don't have any cash, of course.
Right. Of course. Because
why?
We don't do that, you know. You know, we don't generally carry around cash for these things. And then he says something like, get out of here, bitches, or something like that. You know, is totally horrible to them.
Right.
And, you know, we see the beginnings of the infrastructure starting to collapse and how easy it could be just to throw a switch to say, no, women can't access their debit cards anymore.
Right. Fire all the women.
Yeah. And then fire all the women. That's when they, oh God, those scenes were horrible.
See, that's what I found most terrifying. Like, is it just this easy to just...
if you think about how gendered everything is, like your bank account knows if you're male or female.
Right. Right. Moira even mentions that, like how easy is it to just turn off like everyone's accounts that have F in them.
Right. Exactly. Like all you have to do is hit a key that identifies, you know, I mean, your social security has your sex associated with it. So you just take all the female sex social security numbers and anything that's linked to your social security number and you shut it down.
Right.
I mean, we love computers, right?
Damn you, computers!
But that's the power of that is that, you know, I think that that's what made it so terrifying was because I can absolutely see a world where somebody flips a switch and says, you can't have your money anymore. It has to be your next closest male relative can access your bank account.
Right. And that's what I found so frustrating in the beginning when it is showing like Luke's reaction to everything, where he's like, he's trying to like make him step back. Like, hang on, this is not as horrible as you're thinking. And Moira is like, are you kidding me?
Right. Right. Like, you're not seeing the significance of it. But I thought that was very realistic, though, because I think...
That's exactly why it's terrifying.
Yes. I think
because I could see someone doing that and being and trying to defend it. Like, no, it's not as bad as you're thinking. And I'm just like, it is.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And that's and that was what was so chilling about it, was just like, you know, I can't see, you know, X number of people having this reaction and saying, oh, well, this isn't as bad as you think it is. And it is. So,
right, like every time like a law gets passed that like limits women's abilities to like have control over their lives, like people are like, this is not just as bad. It's not what you think, but.
Right. Right. And it's
just an interpretation. I'm like.
And it's a different view. You know, a lot of it is based on how you view, you know, it's chipping away at freedoms. And that's what ends up happening is you lose a little bit and you lose a little bit and you lose a little bit. And then the next thing you know, you're like, my debit card doesn't work. What are you talking about?
I don't have access to my money.
Right. I can't access my savings. I can't, you know, do anything with, my job is now gone just because I'm female. Like,
that's why I like identified with Moira so much in the beginning, because she's a lesbian in there. So she's just like, I don't have a man. I need to get you to walk me home because I don't have an escort or someone to be with me?
Right.
Because I'm not allowed to be by myself anymore.
Right. Yep.
It's horrifying.
It is. It's just, I mean, it's so hard to, you know, to have the freedoms that we have and think about how it just in the blink of an eye, it could be gone.
Right.
Which is, you know, the power of this. It does, you know, it's definitely heightened. You know, I was already kind of on alert from other political happenings.
Right.
So this just like... put it all in, like, you know, yes, it's fiction, but it's just one of those instances of fiction just hitting a little too close to home.
Right. And imagine this was like 30 years ago that this book was written.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's been updated, but
yeah. And you know,
this is still happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to think of it as, how scary it would have been then but how much scarier it is now, because we are so much more dependent on computers and systems that could be manipulated so easily.
Right. Right. Yeah, they never really go into depth in the book about how it all happens.
Right.
Because we're still just seeing June's
perspectives
of of how it all happened. But
oh, and that's one thing, because I asked you about this when I started watching it, if the book is written in this sort of flashback form where it's like she's in the in Commander Fred's house. And right. And so you're actually seeing the flashbacks as she's experiencing them. Yes. So it is told kind of in this non-chronological order. I love stories that are told like that, where you're in the moment and then you go back and you hear the history that kind of relates to everything. I love stories told like that.
Right. It's a lot of her reminiscing on how things happened. And yeah, it's definitely not chronological in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that. And I actually have it. See, I have your copy. It's sitting right here. I haven't started reading it yet.
Oh, good. You haven't lost it yet.
I haven't lost it yet. Not yet, at least. Although things do tend to get lost in my house very easily these days because I have a toddler, but it is here. So I was going to try to start reading it last night, but I couldn't quite delve into it yet. it's such heavy material. It's hard to be like, let's do this.
Some light reading.
A little light reading. Let's relax and lay down. Let's read this before bed. I wouldn't watch the show before bed. Like, I'm like, we have to watch it like at 7 o'clock at night, because I can't have this like in my head, because as I've mentioned many times on the show before, my dream life is very vivid.
Right.
Very easily ties into whatever I'm reading or I'm watching. So,
you know, watching The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, or The Handmaid's Tale before bed.
Exactly.
I'll have horrible nightmares.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, did you want to talk a little bit about how race is portrayed?
I do want to talk a little bit about how race is portrayed. Partially because, so one of the scenes that stuck with me as complicating race in a very non-productive way is the fact that we do have two of the main characters are Black. Both Moira and Luke are Black actors.
Right.
Which is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not upset about that.
No, I'm happy about that. But yeah. I'm so frustrated about how it wasn't addressed in any way. Like, I feel like it should have been.
Yes. It's
because
what I
if
would...
anything, people of color are more paranoid and like are quicker to be suspicious of like the things that are happening in the show.
Right.
I would be automatically like, nuh-uh. I'm getting out of here. Right.
Well,
I can see where this is going.
Yeah, which is interesting because that is the way Moira was. You know, she's like, we gotta
go. Which is why I'm like, Luke,
right.
You have a daughter.
Right. In a world where, you know, this is becoming a big threat. Yeah. And that was part of it. For me, the scene that sort of encapsulates the problems with race and how race was represented in the show are when Moira and June stage their escape from the Red Center, and Moira takes on the aunt's costume.
Right.
To escape. Now, part of my complication with this is we don't see a lot of aunts. I'll put that out there. We don't see a lot of them. The ones that we do see are matronly, postmenopausal women, and the majority of them are white. And I did dig around, and we do actually see a woman of color in an aunt's costume, in an aunt's uniform, in the very background of one scene.
Right.
With no actual speaking role of any kind.
Just to like counter the argument we're trying to make right now.
Right, exactly. To counter this argument that I'm trying to make, which was that I did not believe that Moira, as a young Black woman, could have walked out onto a train in any kind of like Gilead.
Right.
I didn't believe it. And I said it as soon as it came up. I'm like, there's no way that this would happen. There's just no way.
Right. Which is where I think, like, if you're going to change these things from the book, because that is how they make their escape the first. Well, that's how
Moira
makes her escape the first time, is she attacks an ant, takes her costume, and gets out. And in the book, she's not black.
Right, right.
And I feel like no one was thinking of that reaction when they did right. that.
Right, like there's, like, you can't make it so that we see so few people of color and say in any roles whatsoever. And, you know, in the background, in the, you know, the majority of handmaids are white, the, you know, the ants that we see, the majority of the wives that we see, the majority of the commanders that we see, and there's, like, one.
I think there is, like, the token one, like, one person, one commander of color, yes, maybe?
There was one commander of color in the scene I mentioned earlier where they have the commander on trial. In the audience, in a non-speaking role, there is one commander who's black.
Right, which I'm just like, again.
Again.
At least address it. If you're gonna yeah. if you're gonna change, make that change. Because what's so scary about Book Iliad is that it is kind of like this religious, like, white supremacist society.
Right. Which has the same feel of, right? Except there's right. these token people of color.
Except they just change that one thing and don't address it at all.
Right.
Because they're attempting to modernize it by, you know, having Hannah be mixed race and Luke being black and
right.
all of this, but they don't really, like, address the repercussions of that.
Exactly.
Like we don't see the family that Hannah's been assigned to.
Right.
Either. Yeah,
exactly.
I wonder, was she assigned to the one black family?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, well, you know, and it would have taken, like, there was one scene where we see the commanders in the planning stages of Gilead, and they're in the car, and they're talking about, like, how they're going to create the ceremony. Well, we'll have the wives be involved. The wives can be there.
Right.
And then, you know, they'll be in the room or something like that, where they start the indications of what ends up becoming this ceremony, the raping of the handmaids, right. as they're designing Gilead. There could have been in that a context for race. Could have very easily just been, you know, well, you know, we need to take into consideration, you know, handmaids of every color, even something like that. So, you know, so something that puts race in context, because as it is, it's just, it's a colorblind race thing where it's like, oh, we don't see color. Almost everybody's white, but right. we don't see color. And
right, and that's
our problem.
Like, so that's, false to me.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is like, that's how everything is ends up being portrayed. It's like, oh, we don't see color, but we're gonna have almost everybody be white. Like,
right, but we made Luke and Hannah
right
people of color, so yeah. it's okay.
Oh, right, exactly. Which I'm like, no. So look at how progressive we are because we did this, but we're not gonna acknowledge that this is, you know, anything different, and you know.
And I can't imagine, even in a society where, like, children are so scarce, that someone wouldn't comment on it.
Right, exactly. Somehow. That there wouldn't be some sort of indication of it and some sort of reference to it.
But no, racism doesn't exist in this world anymore.
Right, just magically.
Infertility somehow cured it.
Right. Infertility made racism go away. If I roll my eyes any harder, they're going to get stuck in the top of my head. So I did want to bring that up because I do think it's important to think about how it's visible yet invisible at the same time. Like, that's my takeaway. And that's problematic. You can't have race be visible and invisible.
Right. Especially in this, because I think I brought it up briefly when we discussed it before, when we're taking white women being relegated to these roles that, like, this has kind of happened before. It's just mm-hmm. called slavery before.
Right. Yes.
Like, white masters would rape their black slaves all the time
mm-hmm.
and steal their children
right.
and tear them apart from their families.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
this happened before. But
well, and that's part of what makes
putting it into the role of, like, now it's white women, so it's even right. more horrible. It's kind of
right.
just
it's insulting.
Right, like
mm-hmm.
digs at me a little
it,
bit.
Well, it erases that history. And, right. and it shouldn't, because what it should do is it should be referenced to how similar it is, because that makes it even more terrifying, you know, because what's more likely to happen? The past repeats itself.
Right. And Margaret Atwood does mention, like, when she talks about this, that like, everything that she wrote about has happened to someone at one point in time.
Right.
Like,
right.
This isn't some made up story. Like,
right. Which is why it's so scary, right? Why it should be so scary, because it is, you know, a framework of oppression that has been used before and could be used again.
So. Right. But I feel the show is really detrimental when it ignores that aspect of it completely.
Mm-hmm. It needed to have context. It needed that part of the story needed to be told.
Right. Because we never see June's like experience of having a mixed race child
mm-hmm.
at all.
Right. Right.
Definitely something that would have happened even in this, mm-hmm. even in this future where women, children are so scarce, like someone like it would have, definitely an experience that she would have had.
Right. But it's something that would have, yeah, it's not an event that wouldn't have happened. It would have been part of her story. And it's a shame that it's not, because they had the opportunity with those choices to tell that story.
Right. And it doesn't, like, I'm not expecting them to have a whole episode about her having a mixed race child, but like, it's not, like, it's those little experiences that like mm-hmm. make it seem more realistic.
Right. And open it up and make it. Even more realistic, or make it more realistic.
Yeah, and believable.
Yeah. And believable, exactly. Exactly, yeah. Cool, good. Well, I think we pretty much covered what I was thinking about. Did you have any other closing thoughts or anything that you wanted to touch on that we didn't cover?
No, I think we hit most everything.
Well, would you recommend people watch the series? Or read the book, or both.
I think reading the book makes it. Reading the book first, so not the way you did it. Reading the book first and then comparing it to the series, because I think having that background helps.
Yeah, well, I mean, I kept asking you questions about it as I was
watching.
Because
the show just kind of assumes.
Right.
Some of those things, or they don't address that as much as I wish they would have.
Mm-hmm. There are certain holes that are left, certain things that really...
Which I don't know if it was intentional or they were really assuming that you were familiar with the story before.
I don't think anything can do that. I think we're at the point now where you need to assume that people haven't read the source material. And I don't think
it needs to stand by itself.
Yeah, it needs to stand on its own. And I think that this can stand on its own. I don't think it's as rich of a story.
Right. I think it's enhanced by knowing the background of the book.
Well, I will read the book and then I will amend my thoughts and share that after I do read the book. It was one of those that, like, one of my friends, like, it was a book that she always kept saying, you need to read this, you need to read this. And I knew it was like heavy material. And so,
well, that's how I was when I finally read 1984.
God. Talk about heavy. God, I wouldn't want to read 1984 right now.
Right. Like that's how kind of how I feel about, well, I read it a few years ago, but like, I think it, like in this day and age, I do think people should watch the show.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like the book enhances the experience of the show.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not, I don't think I could watch, like, because I thought of like watching like one of the episodes over again before we discussed this, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
I couldn't bring myself to do it either. I wanted to do the same thing. I'm like, I really should go look at this and this and this scene to make sure.
But I couldn't.
And I couldn't. So what I did do was do a Google search and look at a bunch of stills from it to, you know, back up some of the ideas I had about things. Especially talking about the representations of race. I did want to look at what I could see, but I couldn't bring myself to go back and watch certain scenes. I couldn't, like, or any episodes, like I couldn't even put myself in the mindset to do it.
Right.
And as much as it is fantastic storytelling, and it is a story that I think people should watch and understand, because I think it is important right now in particular for us to acknowledge that power structures can change, and power structures that we've taken as benign can become dangerous. Mm-hmm. I think those are important stories to tell. Those are important themes right now in particular. But I would definitely say, don't binge watch this.
No, don't do that.
Don't do it to yourself. Don't do it to yourself, because as important as it may be. Yeah. And that's why I was glad I watched it where I couldn't binge watch it. I think I started to say that, and I don't think I finished it at the beginning of the show, that I watched the first three, because the first three were available immediately.
I watched the first two and I took a break.
Yeah. But you were smarter than I was, because I was like, oh, let's do this. And then I watched, I'm like, oh my goodness, what did I do? And that night I had bad dreams, of course. And then I watched them as they came out and could only watch one a week. And so thank you, Hulu, for not making it all available at once, because you probably would have had quite a few depressed viewers.
Right. Right, and I think they wanted to kind of draw out the hype a little bit, because it's hard to do that with a show that drops all at once.
Yeah, and it's smart. It really is smart, and it, you know, I'm sure it brings in more viewers and more people to subscribe, which is really smart too. So, yeah. So, well, thank you, Isabella, for sharing this discussion with me. I really appreciated it. And thank you for your help as I watched the show. I had lots of questions about it. But we would love to hear from our listeners and our viewers. So have you not watched The Handmaid's Tale? Do you want to watch it? Have we scared you away from it? Which I would totally understand if we have.
Well, and I hope you didn't listen to this entire discussion and haven't watched it yet, because we just spoiled the hell out of it.
Yeah, which I warn everybody on all of these watches episodes. And, you know, even when we start doing, we're going to start doing a series of the Geek Embassy Reads, you know, we'll be spoiling books that we read as well. So I do hope that people have seen it already. But we'd love to hear your thoughts. What were your thoughts and feelings? How did you experience the show? Did you have some of the perspective shifts that Isabella and I talk about, where you had or hadn't read the book, you are or are not a parent? Did those impact your viewing of it? So let us know in the comments. Check us out at thegeekembassy.com. Follow us on Twitter at thegeekembassy. And until next time, get your geek on. Bye.